Work session to order. I'd like to thank the tech people and Lisa for coming and help us digital immigrants get hooked up. So thank you. But we'll now call this work session meeting to order. And just a couple of reminders. The work session gives us an opportunity to discuss concerns that were expressed 3 weeks ago in the public comment portion of our regular board meeting. Our structure is public comment is not allowed during work sessions. It is allowed, however, during our regular sessions. It is open to the public and we welcome those that are here. I'd also like to acknowledge up to this point the respectful dialogue that's occurred, and I'm just hoping that that will continue in this discussion because there is a variety of feelings, a variety of emotions. And I acknowledge that, and I hope that we can continue being respectful with the discussion. So with that said, I'll turn the time over to the superintendent.
Thank you. So you have just a couple sheets right here. There are some slides to a presentation that I put together just so we can kind of walk through some key ideas, manage our discussion, and of course take some notes on. As I've visited with board members, as I visited with staff, and we've talked about tonight's conversation in preparation for it, there are three main goals that I have as we move this conversation forward both tonight and further. First is as a district, we want to make sure that we're providing a safe, inclusive, welcoming classroom environment for all students. That every student, regardless of their background, their home experience, or any other personal characteristic, that they feel safe and welcome and included in our classes. The second goal is I want to make sure that we protect teachers from becoming targets, from individuals who may disagree with whatever symbols or imagery that they may choose or may choose not to display in their classroom. We have seen cases across the country where when this has become a concern, teachers have become targets of online harassment and bullying, of harassment at school and in the community. One of my goals is we make sure that as we are going through this process that we don't put teachers in a position where they are being targeted either because they choose to have a certain symbol in their classroom or they choose not to have a specific symbol in their classroom. And then thirdly, I think we have a great opportunity to model and practice how we can work with our community to positively reach consensus on an issue that generates a very strong emotional response. And that we can model that as a group and we can work on that with our community. So those are my three primary goals as superintendent as we work through this process and have these discussions. You've all received the copies of emails from patrons who have not been able to sign up to make public comment in board meetings, so they've chosen to make their comment through email. You've seen some very specific arguments regarding this issue on both sides of the issue. What I've done is basically summarize them into two very generic statements there. The first being that any symbols, flags, signs, stickers, etc., that have the potential to be interpreted as political speech, religious speech, or expressing a personal agenda should be excluded from the school environment. And again, that's a very broad, generic statement, but because of the conversation that we're having does go beyond any individual symbol, although the rainbow pride flag has typically been the symbol that writers have referenced, the conversation goes beyond that as well. So that's one position. The other position is that some symbols are not overtly political or religious and should not be considered political speech unless a school employee's use of the symbol makes it such. There are some symbols that are overtly political or religious. There are others that right now are in this an in-between zone, and whether they are considered political or not depends a lot on how they're used and what conversations they are part of, what statements people make with them. And those statements can take an image that is very apolitical, you know, not political at all, and can turn it into a political image very quickly. So the other position is that, you know, if it's a symbol that isn't overtly political or religious, then that shouldn't be that shouldn't be removed and shouldn't be considered political speech unless the employee makes it such. So what guidance can a school district put in place? Well, the district can limit the imagery and materials used in classroom displays as long as the guidelines are viewpoint neutral. So for example, we could say that any imagery or symbols unrelated to the curriculum are prohibited. And you have a page from a draft policy from Nebo School District. That is the direction that they have taken as a school district. So down at the bottom of the page, you see the little part with the green highlighting entitled Classroom Displays. That stipulates that classroom displays are supposed to align with the curriculum for the class or grade level. You'll also note that the last section of that on the back page says... Oh, I'm sorry, some of you... Oh, it didn't print both pages. I apologize. I'll have to fix that. Frank is the only one with a two-sided sheet. So I will summarize for you. The very last section of it on the back page states that materials that are on or by the teacher's desk do not count as curricular materials. That's just kind of the place for the teacher to put their personal things, and this policy does not limit what the teacher has on their desk as long as it does not create a disruption to the class environment. So if you had a teacher who put, you know, had stickers or flags or something on their desk, pictures of their family, that's where they've put some flexibility into their policy. And then the second point is the guidelines have to be consistently applied. So we would not be able to, you don't put a limitation of imagery down for a specific symbol. So for example, you would not say we don't allow Blue Lives Matter flags or Black Lives Matter flags in our school. It would have to be much broader than that. It does not have to go as broad as some have suggested in the comments that you can't have any symbols, so you can't have the U.S. flag, you can't have the Utah flag. It does not go that broadly, but there is the ability to put some limitations on there. And the guidance or the point where you go to in the state board rule that relates to that is, you have there at the bottom of the page, R2775156. The educator shall not promote personal opinions, personal issues, or political positions as part of the instructional process in a manner inconsistent with law. So that's where part of the flexibility and with flexibility comes uncertainty in some places, and that's where some of the uncertainty comes from. If it's present in the classroom, does that count as part of the instructional process? Or does that depend, is that as part of the instructional process dependent on what the teacher says or what the teacher does with whatever symbol or imagery they're using? So we do have the ability to place limitations. The limitations just have to be viewpoint neutral and they have to be consistently applied. But if the board were to choose limitations, that is something within the authority and the rights of the board. On the next page you have a statement from the ACLU of Utah. This is regarding school employees wearing items conveying political or religious opinions in the classroom. But it does also reference classroom decorations or displays. Again, it states that the rights of teachers and school staff to express their views in school on public matters is subject to limits and will depend on the specific facts relevant to each situation. As a general matter, courts have said that the items are not disruptive. If they are not disruptive, they are protected as free speech. For example, wearing a necklace with a religious symbol on it is likely protected as an expression if it is not accompanied by active endorsement of religion. So a teacher can wear a crucifix, a teacher could wear a yarmulke, a teacher could wear a CTR ring, and those would all be considered, they would all be protected as free speech as long as it's not accompanied by an active endorsement of religion. A teacher saying, hey, you should come to my church activity this Sunday and we'll do this together.
Saturday
and we'll do the same together. On the other hand, courts have ruled that public schools can bar teachers from wearing buttons supporting a current political candidate. T-shirts with political messages or slogans could also be considered disruptive. They start to be more explicitly political, so there is the ability to put limits there. The same rules apply to classroom decorations or displays. It is best to avoid any appearance that you're advocating a particular religious or political view. So again, limitations on class displays must be viewpoint neutral and consistently applied. But that raises part of the question. So what are some things that we could choose to do as a board? The board could choose to take no action because the overall community response taken as a whole supports current practices. The board could choose to implement a policy that limits the display of certain symbols or imagery. For example, you have the connection to curriculum that Nebo School Districts make. Nebo School District makes. Kane County School District has a policy that just explicitly prohibits flags, except for national and state flags. They do not talk about other classroom displays, so that doesn't get into stickers, posters, etc. They just address flags through theirs. The board could choose to implement a standard that reiterates the guidelines related to educator ethics, as we just read, but does not explicitly address symbols and imagery. So, for example, that would emphasize the importance of teachers not engaging in political speech while giving direction on how symbols may be reasonably displayed. Some of the discussion that's been going on nationally about this is there are differences in how something is displayed. For example, if you have a flag or a sign that every student has to, walks past as they enter the classroom versus a sticker that is by the teacher's desk, one of them is much more easily portrayed as political speech than the other. The flag that is a centerpiece of the classroom generally is more likely to be interpreted as political speech than the image or the symbol that is by the teacher's desk, something like that. So that's where one of the interesting gray areas is as you look at where this conversation has gone nationally. And then finally, the board recognizing the value of symbols and teaching principles directs the administration to begin the process of creating symbols and imagery to communicate our values independent of any imagery that carries outside interpretations. One of the conversations that we've had with staff and with parents, is, as we've talked about this, is recognizing that anytime we'll step back. When we have teachers who use symbols in their classroom, the goal of the teacher has consistently been to communicate a desire to include, to welcome, to provide safe, positive environments for students. And that's without exception. Some symbols that come to us from outside have multiple interpretations. That's both the beauty and the challenge of imagery. It's just like many pieces of art. Some people, you can look at a piece of art and there are different things that you pull out of it depending on your perspective and experience and how we come after it. The same reality exists with the types of symbols that we're discussing. You know, based on a person's background, based on their experiences with that symbol, they will have a different interpretation or different experience than someone else will. So one question has been, well, if the goals of the symbols are to promote inclusion, safety, and welcoming, and we know that we have groups of students who, when they don't see symbols that communicate that they belong, it does affect them negatively. Do we go through the process as a district of creating our own symbols and communicating these with the community of this is how we communicate and promote inclusion, diversity, acceptance, and welcoming? And we create symbols that don't have the challenge of having multiple interpretations from outside. We control the interpretation. That's, again, these are all different options that have come up as I've visited with parents, as I've visited with staff, and we've been in preparation for this. So you all have seen the different perspectives that have been shared from patrons, those have been passed on to you. We will hear some more in our regular meeting this evening. And though that's just some of the background about what direction the board could go, or some directions the board could go with this conversation. We could do more, we could have parent focus groups, we could do polling. There are lots of things we could do to make sure we have a good handle on what are the perspectives and what are the needs and the interests of our community that we need to address. But I think you've all received enough information to have a pretty accurate snapshot of where our community is. So that's the information that I have. I think what I'd like to do is go around and just kind of give each board member some time to share what you're thinking, share what questions you have. Rachel and I will be taking notes if there are things that you would like for us to research more, information that you would like for us to gather. But really, my hope tonight is that we're just kind of working to make sure we understand the issues that our community is asking us to address, that we have clarity there, and we can start to identify not necessarily solutions, but what we think our next steps in the process ought to be as we move that forward. So with that, I'm happy to answer any questions.
You're going to start?
Oh my, you're going to put me in the hot seat right off the bat.
I am.
Jeez, thanks, Larry.
There's power in this chair.
Oh, I know. I've thought a lot about this, of course, since it came to our attention, and I'm having to lead off. The experience I want to share is a little personal, and I hope I don't cry because I haven't actually publicly shared it with anybody. But when I was little, oh my, give me a my new hat, paper, jeez. I grew up
right
in
there.
A very rough home. And went to school often smelling like cigarette smoke and had lights and sirens at our house frequently. So my whole life was very rough growing up. Thank you. And then my father died when I was 8. I was the only person I knew of that didn't have a dad. I didn't know one other person in my world that had no father. It was tough as an 8-year-old to think, oh my, and the reaction I got from people was like, your dad's dead? Whoa, I mean, remember distinctly in my brain, all of my friends saying to me, your dad's dead? Well, yeah, my dad's dead, but you know, an 8-year-old doesn't realize the significance of their dad dying when they're 8. And as I thought about it, I don't think I knew another person that was in my shoes probably until maybe sixth or seventh grade. Just because back in the day, people had mom and dad. They had both parents at home. And so it was interesting to me as I experienced that trauma with my dad dying. And I remember being at the viewing the right before the funeral of my dad. And here walks in Mrs. Erickson, my third grade teacher, carrying like a big, huge, and I wear this shirt today, a big, huge pot of yellow mums. Okay, I don't really love yellow mums, not my favorite flower, but it was the gesture that these flowers are for you. They're not for your mom. They're not for someone else. These flowers are, you know, for me. And at that, good grief, I need to like get some. I thought I drank plenty of Coke before I got here, promise I'm not. But that symbol of gesture from her made me think, I'm gonna be okay when I go back to school. One, she brought the flowers. Two, she came during school hours, which was weird to me. I thought, where all my classmates have no teacher because you're here with me. So those two things to me said, she is going to be, you're going to be okay because you've got her to watch your back when you go back to school. And yes, it was tough. It was a tough time just because, you know, you have daddy-daughter dates and you have all those things that include a father, and I didn't have one. And so it's, my story is one that I can reflect on, and I know that our kids now coming into school have a billion reasons why they're insecure coming in, or maybe secure there and then now they're not secure. I mean, they're as wide as our universe is. They could be in my situation, they could be, you know, there's so many different reasons why kids are coming to school. And I think back about, and I know I've expressed my situation at Logan High too, because I also struggled there being the new kid. I'm the new kid at Logan High. I was the only person I knew of that started Logan High brand new as a sophomore. And once again, it was teachers like, you know, Mrs. Paz and Mrs. Stoddard and Mrs. Johnson and Mr. Henry and, or Mr., yeah, Mr. Henry, you know, Mr. L or Mr. Brunson that really wrapped their arms around me. It was those relationships that formed that helped me become my safe place. And my thoughts are is that all kids need to feel safe because we don't know what their situations are. We don't know what they are when they come into our doors. They have to feel safe and welcome and loved regardless of what situation they're what they're in. If I'd have gone into the school looking for something that says this is your place to go, I would have found it. But I found it in a teacher. So those are my thoughts, is that as we have worked on and recognize that we have to have relationships with our teachers, have to have relationships with their students. We've worked on that in the last couple of years. We've implemented wellness rooms. I just want to make sure that as we move forward that we're thinking that we have to provide a safe environment for all students regardless of what situation they're in, because we can't determine what those situations are going to be. And I don't want to feel like they're excluded from feeling safe ever. They have to be safe, period. There you go.
There's so much to this, and you're gonna make me cry, and I wasn't planning on crying at all.
I'm not gonna cry.
You know, I have.
I may.
Good job, Buck.
The superintendent and I looked for policies, and as you look for policies, you can see they're really extreme ones that, you know, including one that all of you received today, where they fired a superintendent because he tried to follow the law, and the board was. Felt so strongly that certain things had to be banned, but other things were okay. And I think that's one of the challenges, is how are we fair? How do we, well, I looked at that. You are important, you are needed, you are loved. We will do our best to help you learn everything you can so that you can be successful when you grow up. You know, that sign right there. The idea of coming up with our own inclusion type thing is a great idea, except I know how hard it was just to come up with our logo. And you know, that took a whole year, and then people didn't like it, and people did like it. So coming up with something, and then we would need to do a lot of work on this is what this means. You know, some things are just exclusionary. In France, they don't allow women to wear any kind of headscarves in school. And I think about that. I love going into some of our schools and some of our very religious young women who come from other countries. Can't imagine taking away their headscarf. And, you know, I look at a statement that came out today in Florida that was signed on to by community and church leaders saying, we believe in rights and expression for all individuals and support them. We also believe in religious liberty and rights. And so, as a debater, I could frankly debate either side of this. And you can tell the passion of parents from both sides. But I don't want us to be down to, I looked at the flags that were up for the governor when the governor came. If you're truly following a policy that says only the state flag and the national flag is okay, then what about those school flags? And I know of teachers, as they talk about the fourth grade flag, they have students create their own flag or their own coat of armor if a student puts a rainbow on it. Is that going to be excluded? When you start getting into policy that only the school board can make policy. And so I am definitely not ready to make a decision on what we do going forward, but I want to have our schools be a place where especially our most vulnerable kids, our immigrants, our kids that are in this letter of sexual, this area of sexual dysphoria that has so many letters. I'm not good at saying all of them. But I know we have a group of students who are at great risk for suicide. And I love what Governor Cox has said, and boy, has he been beaten up by some of his fellow Republicans because he's come out and said, we want you to live. These are my personal pronouns. What are yours? And that was so offensive to some people. But I felt like our governor was reaching out to some of our most, our kids who need the most support. And again, I agree with you on, we want our teachers to feel supported. We want them to be able to put up a picture of their family, whatever that family looks like. And yet we also know that there are our laws from the state of Utah of what a teacher can and can't speak about. So I am not ready to come up with a decision. That's my quandary at this point in my life. And I appreciate all the input we've received from parents. It's very passionate.
Thanks, Jim. Welcome.
You know, obviously we're in a challenging county. That's the real breadth of what we're trying to do is create an atmosphere of equality. So, you know, I've spent the last week looking at different school districts and situations across the country, looking at some of the results. And there's a lot of complicated information to it, and there is some simplistic information to it. For example, I wrote down one thing that I drew out of collective messages, and it said, we fight in the courts, the legislatures, and open public forums for freedom without favor and equality without exception. And that's what we're trying to get to.
Can you repeat that again?
Freedom without favor and equality without exception. And the responsibilities for a lot of that are coming, you know, I mean, parents obviously work with their families, they work with their children, and then send them to public schools, and our teachers are the ones most responsible for creating an atmosphere where every student feels accepted. And that every student part is I think where we end up going off of regular thought process, thinking that we've got to do something more for these than we do for these. Well, that doesn't make sense if you're working hard to have every student feel accepted. Because there's some favoritism shown anytime we try to do that specifically. I mean, we know that some symbols have been designed to represent specific groups, specific philosophies, or specific interests. And I think what Frank had in here speaks to me, I guess, a little bit towards our predicament in that it is best to avoid any appearance that you are advocating for a particular religious or political viewpoint. And that's where our teachers have a responsibility to stay off of going there. That's why we have a core curriculum, is so that our teachers teach a consistent format. They're teaching math, and they may have their own techniques to how they teach math. But the core curriculum gives them guidelines so that we have a consistency throughout that system. And so I think based on what we've done as a school board over the last 3 or 4 years is somewhat exemplary in how we have tried to do everything we could with ESSER funds to make sure there is a safe place in our classrooms and in our schools. You know, our teachers are not professional psychologists, and we don't expect them to be that. But we expect there to be a process for those who need some extra help or who have something they want to talk about with either a teacher or a principal or a counselor or someone that might be able to help them in this case. And I think there is significant precedence across the country that school boards have a responsibility and the authority to give those general guidelines so that we don't have misunderstandings about a lot of those situations. Some symbols, whether you want to call them flags or decals or whatever we call them, they say something specifically that doesn't necessarily apply to everybody. And in a classroom, everyone should feel that equality. They should feel somewhat equal. And that's where we've got to spend our emphasis, I think. If we're going to spend our dollars, our focus, our training with our teachers, that should all be, how can our teachers make every student feel they're in the right place and focused towards that one mission that nobody feels excluded. I hesitate to share this experience a little bit, but I think it's in the back of my mind as something that is somewhat apropos to what we're dealing with across the country is that what we keep doing is creating situations that are creating tremendous divisiveness, whether it's a political party or a philosophy or whatever the case, everything is creating a divisiveness amongst us. And that's where we are in a sad situation, I think, as a society. The first year of COVID, my wife, who is a school teacher, and I had a chance to take a little road trip. And the interesting part of that, I think, I hope, says what I'm feeling in my heart and in my mind a little bit, is that it was, I think, right at the peak of when Black Lives Matter came together. So those signs were everywhere. Those signs were on front lawns. They were posted everywhere. And we were all trying to understand what that meant, what specific group that represented besides just African Americans. Was it a smaller group of just people who had an agenda? Whatever the case, but we left Utah, drove through Wyoming for a 4 or 5 day trip. And the first experience we went across was crossing the Oregon Trail and what we call the Mormon Trail and looking at pioneers and people who were kicked out of state after state after state. We then went to the Wind River Indian Reservation and learned a whole lot more about how devastating the Native Americans have been treated for over a century. We then learned that 15 miles north of Cody, there's a Japanese internment camp from World War II. Had no idea that it was there. But we went to experience that and learned about how those families and children dealt with being literally kicked out of their homes in California or some other state, brought to this camp, and they were there for 3 years. And at the end of the war, they were given a $25 check and a one-way train pass to anywhere they wanted to go in the country. They had lost everything, got nothing back. And yet their attitude was, we start over. And it took them 10 years, in a lot of cases, to build their communities again and do all of that. So I just mention that because there are so many situations where people have been treated unfairly. And what we're trying to do now is get back to a sense of equality, if you will, with us so that everybody feels that when they come to any of our classrooms and our schools, that they're going to be treated with respect. But which of those four or five groups should we have a sign for or have something mentioned about? Should it be about those Japanese people in World War II that weren't treated fairly? I mean, I lived in Japan for 2 years and loved those people. And I'm shocked the more I learned about that situation and how they were treated. So those are just thoughts that instead of trying to take into too much detail, we need to create a situation where all of our teachers are on the same page as far as equality, without favoritism, and understanding that the political and philosophical instruction is better left out of the classroom than it is in the house or the home or in private neighborhoods, then how are we going to be consistent throughout our district if we can't have some good general guidelines for what's accepted? That makes some sense. I don't know what a policy is necessarily yet, but I do think we have some good examples around the country that have dealt with this previously. They can give us some good guidelines to look at so that every student feels at equality without favoritism.
Thank you. Thanks, all of you, for sharing some hard things. Appreciate it. Over the last 3 weeks, I've spent a lot of time, like I'm sure you all have, thinking about the concern that was raised 3 weeks ago. I do some of my best thinking walking the dogs. And I've walked the dogs a lot the last 3 weeks. And I've also done some research, like a lot of you have. One of the things I came across is that a statement that symbols are not univocal. And I'm thinking, well, what does that mean? Well, that means that there's never a single interpretation of a symbol that everyone within a community is going to accept. It's impossible. Okay? The issue we've got before us is that some in our community view symbols, and specifically in this case the rainbow or the pride flag, as a political symbol. We've got others within our community that are just as adamant that their view is the rainbow flag is a sign of an inclusion and support and welcoming. I think it's critical throughout this discussion, and I know it's not going to be over tonight. We're not taking action. This is going to take us a while. That we're having this discussion that we all respect each other's perspectives, and we focus on the issue and we don't focus on the person, because we're different, okay? And that person may or may not agree with me or you, but we've got to respect their viewpoint. Another important thing that I thought about on my dog walks is how important it is for us as a board and as a community to model respectful dialogue, okay? We talk about preparing our students and young people for the future. We need them to witness the important adults in their lives engaging in a respectful and productive way. I think that's crucial. I taught economics and business. I taught my curriculum. But I'd like to think that myself in 36 years, along with all my other colleagues, taught a lot more than what was in. And being able to teach respectful dialogue, I think, is part of that. Going on, you know, each of us has had unique life experiences. I haven't had Christie's experiences, and I haven't had Ann's or Buck's. They haven't had mine. I haven't had the same experience as anybody in this world. But it's our experiences through life and our human interactions that shape how we view or perceive things. I was fortunate, and I'm going to get emotional, that I was raised in a family that taught me to respect and value everybody. And I don't think I'm unique, but it was emphasized consistently in our household. that you treated everybody the same. And my dad, who was a former educator, assistant superintendent, I can still remember one of the first things he told me as I decided to teach. He said, you know what, when you start teaching, you gotta treat that janitor and that secretary as well as you teach your principal. And he's right, okay? I believe, my perspective is that our teachers have a pride or a rainbow flag in their classroom. In their hearts, they view it as a symbol of inclusion, not exclusion, okay? My life experiences, my personal interactions during my life, that as much as I've had some people profess to me the importance of treating everyone as equal, and that's true, we need to treat everybody as equal. The reality, however, because we're humans, that there are, for a variety of reasons, there are a lot of us that are treated as unequals, that are excluded. Exclusion and disrespect are the reality for far too many people in our schools, in our communities, in our society. And I've personally witnessed and experienced exclusion based on a number of factors, and I'm not unique. Everybody's, I'm sure, experienced to some degree exclusion. I've experienced or witnessed exclusion based on ethnic background, socioeconomic status, religion, appearance, political affiliation, gender, sexual orientation. It's out there. That's reality. Yeah, we say let's treat everybody equally. That's the goal. But the reality is that doesn't happen. Okay? My belief is that we're responsible as a community and specifically as a board for educating a student population that's very diverse. And our student population's being raised, as Christy pointed out, in a diversity of households. I was fortunate, I grew up in a household with a mom and a dad. I had a friend that grew up with just a mom. Another friend that grew up just with a dad. I had a friend that had two moms. I know we've got students that have two moms or two dads, or grandparents or foster people. I know we've got refugees. I know we've got international students. Okay? We celebrate or accept diversity. I'm of a strong belief that we can't be selective in accepting certain types of diversity over others. If we're going to celebrate and accept diversity, it's got to be all diversity. That's where I'm coming from. And our students and children that come from all these different backgrounds need to feel included and supported and safe in all of our classrooms. And I trust and I support our teachers to develop and present classroom environments that they feel from their experience, they're in teaching for a reason, because they care about kids, that they're gonna signal with their classroom environments inclusion, support, and safety. Now, the superintendent's alluded to this before. You know, I'm not condoning in any way saying a teacher should be able to share personal beliefs or political preferences in the classroom. We've got policies against that. If that happens, we've got ways to deal with that, okay? But I believe strongly and agree wholeheartedly with a mom who communicated with all of us today. And this statement she sent stood out to me. A decision to remove all markers of acceptance makes it even harder for a child like mine to walk the halls. Is that what we want? You know, diversity to me is a strength. And all of our students should have access to a positive learning environment. And my good friend Buck, talking about equality and equity, you know, they're two different things in my mind. There are students that I know in our classrooms, my wife's for example, you know, in first grade, that didn't have two parents or didn't have a parent that was literate in their own language. They weren't equal to the little person next to them that had two parents that were English speakers, that were college educated. So my wife had to spend a little bit more time, sometimes a lot of time, with that little person that didn't have the advantages that their classmate did. So sometimes, yeah, we maybe go an extra mile for certain students or people because they're not at the same level as everybody else. And I'm, you know, I taught for 36 years, my wife taught for 30, and that was something we saw every single year. And I don't think it stopped in 2017 when we retired. So thanks for allowing me to share. Just one last point. You know, we can disagree and we can still be kind. All right. Greg, you came in on the tail end.
I'm sorry I'm late.
Oh, don't be sorry. We're just glad you're here.
I was an angry Alaskan at this time yesterday, but it's an airport. If you can get the reason for as everybody here, this issue, spent a lot of time pondering, but thank you for the importance that we as board members have in my own responsibilities, of being able to try to protect the delicate, tender minds of these people, these little people that come into our schools. And I'm not sure how much exposure some of these students need to receive about the difficulties of our world at those very tender ages. And so I am in a position right now where I probably have no idea what kind of policy we will end up with. I think everything I've heard, I agree with. Definitely, I'm not sure everyone is included. I know from my own experiences that I'm not as broadly as exposed as I probably need to be to deal with these kinds of issues. So I'm looking for a lot of input, good ideas. Somehow, somewhere, we all get some inspiration in this new process to come up with a policy that will work for everybody so that people do feel included, people that are concerned about the protection of delicate minds, both come away saying, okay, we can live with this. That's my hope. I think that's our goal.
Any other comments, questions, any guidance for Superintendent for researching anything? I mean, I think we've all said that this isn't a short discussion. This isn't going to be solved overnight. And I'll be the first to admit I don't have all the answers. And, you know, we talk about balance, but, you know, what balance is for one person is not the same for another. That's why we get paid the big bucks, right? Speaking of symbols, awesome. Greg, Frank, I never want to see BYU flag in any sport.
But see, we do have them because we have all of our work.
I know, we do.
Our college flags.
And I want to know how they got through the hiring process if they were a BYU graduate. That's what I want to know.
In the high school, walking down the halls looking for a certain. It was very, very difficult to find. And there were all kinds of these, like, I'm going, brown, okay. The kids were sitting brown, as he's kind of going, come on, guys, where is the one that's important?
The Aggie flag's all over.
I did ask about that once. It turns out lots of students were taking it home to put it in their bedroom.
Because they were afraid it would be torn down.
If I just have one more comment, I just think that it's critical moving forward that, I mean, I think we all understand that the Board of Education is, we are here elected by our public. And certainly we joined on to be in this capacity because of our love for education and our love for children. And I hope that as we move forward, I don't think a time has gone by since I've been on this board that we haven't had the focus being on students and their success. So I just hope that as we move through this process that our public and those that, you know, are sending us email, which is, I mean, I love that we get so much comments from our public because they're passionate about it as well. But I just think as long as we keep our focus on kids and what's best for our students, that we'll be able to come with a happy beginning, that we'll be able to help everybody moving forward. And I think that we have had that in the past, that I can't anticipate that we would ever, you know, diverge from that course. But certainly, we're here to make what's best for kids, not necessarily, you know, ever do anything that would cause them any kind of harm or put them in a situation where they can be their best potential.
Larry, just a comment. I wanted to reflect back on how hard we worked as a board on the DLI situation, as far as listening to both schools, parents, open forums, getting as much feedback as we possibly could before we made what we felt like was a sincere decision that would be appropriate. And on the same token, we knew it wasn't going to be pleasing to every parent, every student, every situation. This is our first year. We have a DLI school, a magnet school. And we had the Adams Community Council session yesterday afternoon, and we had a representative from the Hillcrest, and they were ecstatic about their children being at the Adams School. And not everybody feels that way, Rob. We build a brand new school, and then we send them to an old school, and we know that for the short term causes some scenarios. But I would hope that there's somewhat of a community trust that we're going to look at this in every aspect as we evaluate what's a good scenario.
Thank you all for sharing those thoughts. We'll compile the notes and share those out with everybody as part of the minute, so we can continue to kind of formulate ideas. And I think because Larry and Frank and I meet as the leadership, we'll be discussing, okay, what do we want our next steps to be with this? Where do we take the conversation next? So we take what's been shared tonight, we take what continues to get shared from our community, and we bring that together. So we can choose the best direction for our students. So thank you for sharing what you did tonight, and that's what I think our next steps are as an administration, and we'll wait to see as the direction from the board evolves if there's additional steps we need to take.
Thank you. So we'll adjourn this work session and reconvene at 5 o'clock for our regular session.
Yep, the next door.